Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 1 p.m. and that is Pacific summertime, and today's May 24th. Well, I thought that today I would start off and talk about debt. I've spent a lot of time today writing about debt and thinking about it, and then when we look at the Eurozone's and Economic Surprise Index from Citi, we can see that the way that this index is calculated is quite simple. It goes on what economists think is going to happen in the economy, and they were really very bullish at the end of last year because things had been coming in ahead of expectations, so they raised their forecasts. Then the economic forecast didn't prove to be realistic, and now we've seen that the economy is undershooting those expectations. Well, they've been undershooting those expectations by a lot, and that's why this economic surprise index has been falling. It's been surprising on the downside because economists were too bullish at the end of last year. So that's part of the background of what we're seeing evolve in the market right now. Well, when we look at what's going on in Europe, there are two important things that are going on, and we could probably spin that out to three. The first is Italy. Well, the Italian bond yield was up again today, and it's coming up towards about 180 basis points over bunds, and it's at the upper side of its range that's really been going on now since the beginning of 2015. The reason that peripheral bonds have been so suppressed in terms of their yields is because of the ECB's massive buying program. So now you have a government in Italy that is talking about issuing mini BOTs. Well, the S&P 500, or excuse me, S&P rating agency is has basically characterized that as potentially an attempt to set up a separate currency. Well, if that is the conclusion of the markets, then it is likely that bond yields are going to rise further. So, what is the EU doing to try and curtail the kind of risk that's involved in that specific way of thinking about the market? Well, they have introduced the potential for sovereign bond-backed securities, SBBS, and Germany is definitely not going to stand for that, but what it would in fact do is take the bonds of peripheral countries, package them up, and weight the packaging based on the economic size. So that would give a lot of preference to a large economy like Italy being pushed in together with a large economy like Germany, and indeed France, and then reselling those bonds. This is a proposal right now. It would have to be passed by each of the individual members of the EU. It's a pooling of debt that Germany has been very clear about opposing for decades already. But it is something that is fundamental to the EU if it's ever going to truly survive as an entity, that you need to have pooling of debt, you need to have pooling of taxation, so there would have to be some form of federal tax. The way that's being proposed right now has been within the banking sector. And so far, the progress on getting these kinds of things done has been really rather slow. Well, what's happening in Italy may prove to be a catalyst to really push the needle in terms of getting people within the EU bureaucracy to decide, well, what exactly is it that they want from the currency union? Because if the currency union is going to survive, then some of these very large intransigent questions are going to have to get attacked or dealt with in one way, shape, or form at some point. Then, if we look at what's going on with the ECB's balance sheet, well, they're still increasing it because they're not due to end their quantitative easing program until September. But there are significant headwinds to them ending their quantitative easing program. I've often thought that the ECB is probably between 3 and 5 years behind the USA in terms of its monetary cycle. This has been a really rather incredible process of increasing the size of its balance sheet, taking it up from 2 trillion to 4.5 trillion over the course of the last 3.5 years. But the European economy is slowing, and I saw this chart in here earlier on today, and I thought it was worth highlighting. So it is the Italian exposure to high yield. Excuse me, high yields exposure to Italy. Italy represents approximately 20% of European high yield, and we are seeing that the high yield sector is rising. So, for example, if we look at if we look at the high yield index for the Eurozone, then it is rising. And I think that's important, because it's not something that we've really seen in terms of the US. What I think is important about this particular chart is that it only goes back 3.5 years, and 350 basis points is still actually quite low relative to the kinds of spreads that we saw back in 2008. But it is rising, and it is trending higher, and that's not something that we see, for example, in the USA. If we look at, for example, the Barclays US High Yield Spread Index, it remains range-bound. It is not trending higher. So if we were to think about what are the potential lead indicators for problems in the Eurozone economy, it would be that on the one hand, you have the fact that the economy is surprising on the downside. And that's not an environment where they can immediately erase their monetary stimulus. Then you have the fact that the Italian bond yield is rising, and that it is likely to break higher for perhaps no other reason than political reasons, that if you really want to put manners on a populist government, well, then you have to deliver much higher borrowing costs to them to see what they're going to do in that type of scenario. Will they be brought to heel in much the same way that these firebrand politicians were brought to heel in Greece or indeed in Cyprus? Of course, the big difference is that Italy is not only a large economy, but it is also a member of the G7 and a founding member of the EU. So they may not be able to impose the same kind of heavy-handed policies on Italy that they did on other countries. We've already seen that was the case in the bankruptcy, or in fact, it was the bailout of BMPS. That is, I think, something that does have to be considered. And when we look at the euro, that's the third point that I wanted to bring up, then it was in very mildly positive territory in here today, but this is a significant trend deterioration. If this had been a consistent environment, it would have found support around 120. It has not done so. There is now a short-term oversold condition, but it has a lot of work to do if it's going to sustain a move back above the trend mean. And so far, there's scant evidence of that. And with the kinds of rather acute questions that are being asked about Europe, then this is a rather big question. Then, of course, you have the knock-on effect for what's going on in Italy with the banking sector. And the EU's banks moved on to a new closing low in here today. And part of the reason for that is because if we look at the constituents of the index, and I don't have access to the weightings, but if we just simply rank the constituents of the European banks index, the first is that there are a lot fewer of them now than there used to be. And I've grouped the Italian ones together, and they represent 16.5% of the market cap of the index. So that is rather important. But I think one of the other very important points about this particular index is that it is primarily an Italian and Spanish index. They represent not far off half of the constituents of the index, whereas Germany, the largest economy in the EU, has only got two listed banks. All the rest of them have either been merged or nationalized, and both Commerz and Deutsche Bank are not in particularly good stead right now. And in fact, they have declined to such an extent that they only represent now very small weightings within the European banking sector. The two big ones are Santander and BNP Paribas. BNP Paribas had been breaking higher not so long ago, and it had been one of the clear outperformers within the broader European banking sector. And it has now at least encountered resistance in the region of the trend mean, and it really does need to hold that 60 euro level if this breakout from the almost 8-year range is going to be sustained. Well, that is having a knock-on effect for sentiment towards Europe. If we look at the Euro Stoxx index, it was in mildly negative territory today, but it was down about 1% yesterday. It's pausing in the region of 400. If we do see additional weakness in the euro, then that should represent a bullish characteristic in terms of the nominal price appreciation for those European indices. So what happens with the euro is going to have a significant impact on the way that people are looking at Europe. But if we were to think about where the epicenter of risk is right now, then it's most likely in Europe. Now, I had a question in here today from an Australian subscriber, because 30% of all of I think that's the correct figure from the article that was sent through. Of so I think it is 30% of all of Australia's exports go to China. The big question going on in China right now is, when are they going to introduce a property tax? The Shanghai Property Index is leading on the downside. It has been falling in a dynamic manner this week. It is pulling back from the 7,000 area and the region of the trend mean. The progression of higher reaction lows that had been evident since the middle of 2016 has been broken. It has encountered resistance in the region of that peak back from 2015. So this is, if we just ask very simple filter questions, if we were to try to describe this trend to a blind person, well, we could ask, is it trending or ranging? And we would have to conclude that it was trending higher. It did accelerate up out of the range. That range, that breakout failed. And now we have a progression of lower rally highs. So if it's trending at all, it's trending downwards. What are the consistency characteristics of that downtrend? It's a progression of lower rally highs, and it's encountered resistance in the region of the trend mean. Is there any evidence that it's over? Not yet. A clear upper dynamic and a break back above 7,000 would be required to question the downward bias. And considering that in 2014 it was trading at 3,000 and it's currently just below 7,000, there's probably quite a bit of fat on this index if we do get a deterioration in the housing market in China. So I think that is one of the big questions that is sitting out there. And the banks index has also been pulling back. So it is also now back below the trend mean. Now, we haven't seen the same kind of selling pressure in Hong Kong. The H-share index was in mildly positive territory today, but it is struggling to hold this move above 12,000. It pushed up above it in the middle of May, and then it has pulled right back down again. So it has not yet broken the region of the trend mean, but it is spending rather a lot of time around this level. And if it does sustain a move below the trend mean, well, then that will have broken a more than 2-year uptrend. And we know that this index has been ranging between 8 and 14,000 since 2009, and we're relatively close to the upper side of that range. So what happens in this area is going to be rather instructive. And the other individual share to keep an eye on is Tencent. It bounced rather impressively from the trend mean 2 weeks ago, but it hasn't been able to capitalize upon that. And in fact, if we look at the daily chart, there's a preponderance of blue candles. So what that tells us is that the price has been opening up, has been opening strongly, but then it gives up its advances throughout the trading session. That's not bullish action. And what it tells us is that there are people intraday trying to reduce the size of their positions. So it really does need to hold that low around the $375 area. And if it fails there, then we would have to conclude that a medium-term top is in. Now, if we go across the rest of Asia, then the Nikkei was in negative territory in here today, and part of the reason for that was because of the continued strength of the yen. We have had a certain amount of risk off coming through in here today. Yesterday was definitely a day of two halves, and the yen had pulled back in much the same way it has in here today. But as long as the yen is strengthening, then that's likely to act as a headwind to the Japanese stock market. It is now right in the region of the trend mean. Ideally, if the dollar is going to remain dominant, well, this would be a convenient area for it to begin to find support once more. But the bigger question is whether this is going to translate into a more risk-off environment, or whether this is just a consolidation within the dollar's uptrend after what had been a very impressive advance over the course of the last 6 or 7 weeks. I suspect that the latter case is going to be the most likely scenario. Well, then it's perhaps worth also looking at Australia. The ASX 200 has it got right up to test its high and it's come back to test the 6,000 level. When we look at this on, excuse me, a longer term basis, the peak back in 2007 was below 7,000, and it has been struggling to get back above 6,000 now for nearly 3 years. There is a progression of higher reaction lows, and I think much of the argument about whether it will be able to sustain a move above that 6,000 area is going to be tied to the Australian dollar. The Aussie dollar has been firming. Australian yields are actually below those of the US right now, and that's perhaps not the most bullish factor. When we look at the 10-year yield in Australia, then what we're presented with is a very well-defined range, and it's been trending below, or excuse me, ranging below the 3% level now since 2015. The yield was coming off a little bit in here today, but a sustained move of back above 3% would, I think, begin to reattract investors back towards the Australian market. They are generally accustomed to getting a competitive yield from Australia, and right now that's not exactly the case. But there is at least some evidence that the Aussie dollar is firming, and that is probably part of the reason why the ASX 200 has been a little bit weaker over the course of the last few weeks. But Wall Street continues to be the leading market, and the Nasdaq today, following its rather impressive close yesterday, spent most of the day in negative territory, but was able to recoup all of the loss by the close. The index has been range-bound now for nearly 2 weeks. Perhaps the more important point is that it has held the progression of higher reaction lows and continues to bounce from the region of the trend mean. It has been pausing around this 7,000 level. 7,000 represented an area of resistance back earlier this year. It's a bit of a psychological barrier that the index is going to have to push beyond in order to confirm a return to demand dominance. But the Russell 2000 has already broken on the upside, and so far it is holding that advance. As long as it's holding the advance and the breakout, then we can give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. Then I think it's also worth looking at the regional banks index. Regional banks had pushed on to new recovery highs in here this week. They were in mildly negative territory in here today, but that is well off the lows. with the rolling back of some of the Dodd-Frank rules, then that's generally positive for the banking sector, but perhaps most especially for the regional banks. And there has been a clear upward bias to trading to the index now for much of the last few years. It is significantly above the peak that was posted back in 2007, and this continues to look like a reasonably bullish environment. If we look at the Dow Jones, then it was off its lows in here today. It has been pausing below this psychological 25,000 level for the last 2 weeks, and it is going to have to sustain a move back above it, I think, to really help to cut to renew faith among the bulls that it is capable of more than a short-term rally. There has definitely been 3 instances of support coming in around the 23,500 level, and that coincides with the region of the trend mean. The peak that we saw following the acceleration in the latter part of last year and early this year was leading us up to a medium-term correction, and medium-term corrections generally last from anything from 6 to 18 months. But with the smaller caps breaking out, then the likelihood is improving that this correction could be limited to the 6-month horizon, or close to the 6-month horizon rather than the 18-month horizon. Then what we're also seeing is that bonds are catching a bid, because there is some increasing risk, and there is still the geopolitical brinksmanship going on between the USA and North Korea, and yields are back below 3%. Medium term, we know there's a lot of additional new supply, but there are additional factors that people are looking at, and also they're looking at the relative attraction of yields that were at least in excess of 3% relative to what's available elsewhere. And against a reasonably strong dollar environment, then that's attractive to foreign investors, which is creating some demand for US treasuries. So that is also helping to arrest the decline in the market. And we also know that there is an overextension relative to the trend mean, so that increases the potential that we could have some additional ranging around this level, anywhere between the 3 and 2.8% level, which would unwind that overextension. Then, if we turn our eye to the commodities market, the continuous commodity index has been ranging for 2 years, and it broke higher in here this week. Not in a particularly dynamic manner, but this is a new 3-year high. So I think this is important, and it holds out the prospect that the commodity complex is returning to a position of demand dominance. The gold price was up $11 in here today. If we get upside follow through tomorrow or through the end of this week, tomorrow is the end of this week, then that will help to, I think, begin to confirm that demand is coming back in the region of the trend mean. If we look at it on a daily basis, it is back above the $1,300 area, but it really does need to do more than that to confirm that we're back in an area where people are willing to devote significant capital to push it back up towards the upper side of the range. If we can get it back above $1,320, that would confirm a failed downside break and greatly enhance the potential for it to have a run back up towards the $1,360 area, which we would then start to talk about at the completion of the 5-year base formation. I think the more important point over the medium term is that the downtrend from the peak in 2011 broke in 2016. That was the type 2 bottoming characteristic, the massive reaction against the prevailing trend. We've had a period of right-hand extension, which has prevailed now for 2 years, and it is getting close to the time that one might expect when we could see a clear break above $1,400. So I continue to hold gold. I believe that it is the most likely scenario is that it will break on the upside. Then if we look at the oil price, oil has been pausing below the $80 level for the last few sessions. And The size of the consolidation so far has been relatively small, and that was already following what was a relatively inert consolidation below $75. Even a reaction of approximately $3 would still be normal within the context of this advance up from the February low. So this doesn't look like anything other than a brief pause, and I think that the likelihood is that we are going to see a continued rise in oil prices in the absence of clear downward dynamics, and most particularly a larger pullback. So I think when we take it all in stride, there are risks in Europe, and unfortunately that's just not new news, that there are challenges that need to be addressed, and there needs to be a vision for what a United States of Europe might look like that could be particularly potentially appealing to voters. And there's no sign of that just yet. So what that suggests is that there is going to be additional selling pressure, there are going to be additional risks, and I think it's rather unlikely that the ECB is going to be able to unwind its quantitative easing program. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.